here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Welcome, everyone, to Couch Potato Diary. Happy Wednesday. My name is Peter Klein. Thank you very much for tuning in to the show today. Coming up, a lot to react to following the Western side of the play-in. We will get into the Eastern side of the play-in. A wild night sets the postseason in the NHL, and a little bit of wrestling talk as well. So a lot to cover on the show today. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Let's start with a little bit of basketball talk. So we now know 7 of the 8 playoff teams in the NBA, and we know one that won't be making it. We will start with the team that is in, the LA Lakers, coming off of their win over the New Orleans Pelicans. And the story in this game, as it is in almost every game that he plays, it is the greatness of LeBron James. What an unbelievable performance last night, helping the Lakers finish as the 7th seed in the Western Conference. He was spectacular in this game. And there are so many different ways you can go about it, but you could just see the difference when he was off the floor that this team really struggled offensively. And then when he was going, it just, everything had a much better flow to it. He was a much better director out there, and he was dominant. He had control of everything when the Lakers were out there offensively. Now, it did start to get away from them a little bit with LeBron out there in the fourth when Zion was going just absolutely berserk, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But LeBron had control of this game for most of the time that he was out there, understanding when the double team is going to come, how New Orleans was going to attack him defensively. It was just his basketball IQ was on full display, and he's still physically strong enough to be able to get to the rim. He's drawing a lot of fouls now instead of finishing at the rim, but he is still so smart and just an incredible athlete to be able to get to where he needs to get to. I don't even know if shooting wise he had a great night or didn't feel like a great night. It was the control that he had over this one that was so impressive to me. And his other star, his co-superstar, Anthony Davis, I thought kind of fought it in this game, but he came up with a winning play when they needed it. LeBron has Daniels on him late. It's a 2-point game. He's trying to get to the rim, not going to, because Daniels, to his credit, very good defensively, forces him out wide. It's a tough jump shot that ends up coming up well short. I believe it was an air ball. And AD rises up over two players to make the to get the offensive rebound, drawing a foul, hitting two free throws, and it was ball game from there. New Orleans just couldn't close that distance when they needed to. That was a winning play from Anthony Davis, and it's those types of plays that this team needs if they're going to be successful. It is like big moments. Who is going to step up? You know LeBron is going to. It wasn't an awesome shot, but AD is right there, right spot, right time. And I mentioned on the instant reaction show that we did, I didn't think that he played all that well in this game, and I didn't think he took advantage of what was, I think, a rather significant size mismatch. He was comfortable taking advantage of a speed mismatch against Valanciunas, but when he had Nance on him, or there would be a switch or whatever, he did, I don't think he did enough to really punish when New Orleans was going small. But this was a time where he was able to take advantage of that size, get the rebound, put it in, and or draw the foul anyway, and set this team up. But he is going to have to be, I think, significantly better for the Lakers going up against the Denver Nuggets. Los Angeles basically has to be perfect for 7 games, and even then it may not work. They got beat last time in 4 games. Now, they played well, but they got beat in 4 games, and I'll be interested to see how they attack it. One of the differences for LA this year, though, is the play of D'Angelo Russell. He was very good in the start of this game. Launching from 3, he was hitting quite a bit to start. I thought kind of cooled off in the middle part of the game, but he came up again. A huge steal late and then another big three at points in this game that helped kind of, I don't want to say ice it away because it was close all the way to the end, but to really help build some momentum for the Lakers. And he has been a difference maker all season long. This team has been dying for someone to step up offensively. Reeves has been good. AD and LeBron have been them, but they've needed another guy to help get this team out of a slog sometimes. When they're in the half court, and Russell has been that guy to give them just a bit of a spark on the offensive side. And if they're going to do anything against the Denver Nuggets, and to be honest, they probably won't do anything against the Denver Nuggets, but if they're going to do anything against the Denver Nuggets, it is going to have to be D'Angelo Russell balling out and having big games with Jamal Murray on him and making them kind of shift. It'll probably be KCP on it. Well, we'll see how they attack it. Either way, he's going to have some really big games. And with him and AD out there, when LeBron is on the bench, they're going to have to light things up and really take advantage of those minutes. It's going to be a gigantic uphill climb. And again, they probably won't do it. But I do think that this is the one thing that they have in their bag that they didn't really last year, is this level of a D'Angelo Russell player. On the other side, the Zion Williamson injury just sucks. And now it sounds like he is going to be out for Friday's game against Sacramento. That probably does it for the Pelicans then. I mean, even still, like, I was not, we'll talk about Sacramento in a second, but even if Zion was out, if B.I. was healthy, then you'd feel a little bit better about it. But Ingram, he just didn't click in this game. And they're going to need him to be a superstar coming up on Friday for them to have any hope against Sacramento. And this really sucks because this was the type of performance that we were all waiting for from Zion Williamson. Big stage, national spotlight, huge implications of potentially getting in as the seventh seed and not having to worry about a game on Friday night. And he was the one dragging this team. No, like, Alvarado was playing well, but Zion was the one who was dragging him in. Just a quick commentary thing. I was getting a little frustrated, and not that Alvarado wasn't playing well, but this was like the Zion Williamson game. This is the best he has looked on the biggest stage, and he is getting anything he wants offensively, and then he goes up and throws down a vicious alley-oop. So we have like the makings of a new superstar in the NBA, and Reggie Miller's going, Alvarado! Like, yeah, he's been fine, but the story of that no one is going to work tomorrow talking about, man, just see how hard Alvarado played. It is all about Zion Williamson. And so I thought that they just kind of missed the moment there a little bit. But Zion was tremendous. I loved every aspect of his game. I thought he was so aggressive offensively. He had been absolutely shut down by LeBron in the regular season finale. And then to be able to come out and just get, like I said, get whatever he wanted was so impressive. Rebounding was great. Defensively, he was fine. But this was the game changer Zion Williamson that we were all waiting for. And if the season does end for New Orleans on Friday, they're going to have a big offseason coming up because I think you can now trust that you have a star in Zion Williamson. Now, you do have to worry about the health, case in point. But I do think that you have to really look at this New Orleans team as one that can make some noise when Zion Williamson is good. We have now seen what they can do when Zion Williamson is motivated. We now see what a motivated Zion Williamson can do. And that play-in tournament, or the in-season tournament, sorry, the NBA Cup, does feel like a bit of a turning point for him, where they were playing well, and he goes out there and gets embarrassed by the Lakers, and everyone's calling him fat. And everyone is talking about him. And that was, I think, a wake-up call for this guy that I need to take it seriously, and I owe it to my teams to really go out there and, sorry, owe it to my teammate to go out there and really take this thing seriously. And he did. So now a full season of that, watch out, NBA. Moving on to the 9-10 game as the Sacramento Kings move on. But again, I don't think a lot of people are talking about that. A lot of the talk today is about the Golden State Warriors. And quite simply, talked about it on the Instant Reaction show last night. They look cooked. They looked old. They looked slow. They looked oddly overwhelmed by the moment, extremely flustered by what the Sacramento Kings were throwing out there, and not able to pivot away from everything that Sacramento knew they were trying to do. I said last night, you didn't trust a soul out there other than Steph Curry for Golden State. Like, Moody would have been probably number two that you were trusting, given how they were playing. Draymond is Draymond offensively, like, distributing, he's fine, but with the ball in his hand for more than 5 seconds, it's not great. Chris Paul, what you got from him was gravy, but I think they needed him to be Chris Paul from a few years ago. Klay Thompson was dreadful at 0 for 10. And I think cost himself significantly in free agency. And it does not make the job any easier for this front office in the offseason. With Klay Thompson as a free agent, what are they going to do? I have no idea how they are going to handle this. If you want to keep the band together, I think that Klay could come in and that rate is going to be significantly discounted. Or if he just wants to go out and get paid, and who can blame you? Because after last night, how many more big contracts does he have left? I would say none. But if you have a young team that is desperate to bring in a Klay Thompson and overpay him, it's going to be tough for him to say no to that. I do think that having a full offseason of kind of understanding his limitations, hopefully he can kind of honestly look at what happened this season and figure out where it all went wrong and kind of understand that he is now in a next chapter of his career. And now he has a full offseason, I think, where that has really smacked him in the face. And he can come out and figure out a new way to contribute, because the old way isn't there anymore for this guy. It sucks, but it wasn't. It's a decade run for this team, but this, unless there are substantial changes made this offseason, I think that's it. And the end is probably the Draymond Green punch, although it's going to be tough to convince people after watching Jordan Poole for a season do whatever he wants in Washington that that guy would have been the key to unlocking things in Golden State. But yeah, it's done. It's over for this group. It really is. On the Sacramento side, that was a hell of a performance. Keegan Murray, a lot of people talk about Sabonis and Fox as the key guys for Sacramento. The way Murray was playing last night, it is just their own kind of big three. Like, it is a small version of big three, but it's their top three instead of just the top two now. That was so great, and he fed off of that home crowd that might be one of the better home crowds in the NBA, and them able to at least hold on to the 9 seed was really important for them because they fed off of that home crowd all night. He was great, and Ellis was a tone setter. He was a dog in everything they needed to do in blitzing Steph Curry and giving him all sorts of problems. I'll be interested to see how they handle it. They are at a significant size disadvantage. They bullied Golden State last night, 15 offensive rebounds. They just took their lunch money all game long and really beat them up. But they're not going to be able to do that against JV and Ingram. Maybe against the smaller unit with Nance. But when they go small, that's the bench unit. And that was the only way Golden State stayed in this game, was when Sacramento's bench came in. We'll see how Sacramento's able to adjust. But they have 5 guys you trust. And that's it, because of the injuries to Monk and Herter, which sucks. But they have 5 guys that you trust, and that's basically it. So I don't love their chances going into the 8th place game coming up on Friday, but we'll see. We'll see. If another hot shooting performance like that, and they're going to be tough to stop. Moving into the East, it is Philadelphia against Miami coming up tonight. This is going to be such a fun matchup. I wonder if Philly is just not, or if Miami is just a tough matchup for Philadelphia. Bam on Embiid is going to be really interesting. You can throw size at Maxi. Hield is a bit of an X factor. I think they're going to need him to have a big game. And we'll see. Like, the thing for Miami is, are they going to be able to score enough to kind of keep up here with Philadelphia? They're going to want to just drag this game into a slog. And if Hield is going and Maxi is going, then I don't think Miami is going to be able to counterpunch all that well in this spot. But it's a really interesting game. And there's also the thought of how how fresh and how healthy is Joel Embiid? He had to leave the last game because of some problems again, and he is just coming back from an injury. So we will see what Joel Embiid shows up. If he is anything less than 100%, I don't think Philadelphia gets the win here. I actually kind of like Miami in this spot. We're not doing an official today's ticket, but I took Miami as an underdog play at plus 180. I just think that they kind of match up well here with Philadelphia in a playoff setting. So I think that's going to be a whole lot of fun coming up on later on tonight. The other one, Bulls Hawks, I simply do not care, to be perfectly frank with you. I don't think this will be a well-played basketball game. It could have the greatest buzzer beater in the history of the sport, and I still will be like, oh, okay, I'll check out the highlight of the buzzer beater. I'm not even looking forward to watching the, 10-minute highlights on YouTube of this game a little bit later on. These are both teams that I think need to go in entirely different directions. DeRozan's a free agent now. Get him the hell out of there, because he is still, I think, a great contributor to a team. You look at it, he'd be perfect. I've said this for years now. He'd be perfect on the Lakers. He is one of the better half-court mid-range scorers in the NBA, and goddamn do they need that. So he is the perfect kind of finishing piece for so many teams. I'll be interested to see what he does in free agency. They need to blow it up, and it didn't work. That they went for it with acquiring DeRozan, going out getting Vucevic, along with LaVine and Caruso. They needed Ball, and he just wasn't able to stay healthy. And it is too bad, because I do think that this is an interesting team if you have a guy who can really facilitate it all, and they just didn't. White has been good coming back. This is already longer than I wanted to go on this game, but the long story short is they need to go in a different direction here. And Atlanta, the Murray Young debate or experiment, sorry, just hasn't worked either. And I think it has significantly lessened the value of Murray league wide. And now they're just kind of stuck in a, what do we do now? So get ready for it tonight. Lastly, Jontae Porter is now banned for life from the NBA after it was revealed that he placed bets on the Raptors to lose. And when you are a member of the Toronto Raptors, that seems to be a problem. So he is gone. I've talked at length about this. If you're betting on your own games and it's to lose, or your totals to be under, the NBA had no other recourse but to ban this guy for life. The one thing I will say, I find it endlessly fascinating that all the talk is, oh, well, you see, legalized gambling, you get in bed with these gambling partners, this is what's going to happen. I have said before, if you had internet, you've been able to gamble on sports for a really long time now. All these websites didn't just happen to have the infrastructure ready to handle a boatload of gambling all at once here, and once it became legal. These have been things that have been going on for a really, really long time out on them internets. And I find it hilarious that people are like, well, now that it's legal to gamble, illegal gambling is going to start. Like, look, we could throw games here. We could really mess it up. No. Let's wait for it to be legal. Let's not go do these bets off a website in Switzerland or some shit like that. No. We have to wait for gambling to be legalized before we start to do illegal activity. I do, and look, I've had a gambling sponsor on this website before, on this podcast before, I don't now, but that is through, I don't think, any animosity. It's just, you know, our terms didn't really work out, so that's fine. I enjoy that aspect of sports quite a bit, and again, have for a long time, wink wink. But a part of me is coming at this from a side of being, I don't want to say protective, but there's a bias here. I think that it is a huge part in the rise of the popularity of sport, not just in the last couple of years. It's an aspect of it that I enjoy, and I understand that there are people who cannot enjoy it in moderation, and so being inundated with all of this would absolutely be a problem. The same way that if you had a drinking problem, having beer ads thrown at you all day would probably be a bit of a problem. But the thing that I will say is that I wonder if because these leagues have these partnerships now, if the checks and balances are just even more whatever. Like if this happened 10, 15 years ago on some offshore account at a website that would probably give you viruses that ended your computer's life, I wonder if there'd be the same flags going up in all this. Or because things are a little bit more legalized now, and because these leagues have these partnerships with these websites and these gambling institutions, I wonder if it's easier for the red flags to go up. So I know a lot of people are going like, ban gambling forever. And I'm going the opposite. It's like, oh no, the thoughtful folks at the casino are the ones who saved the day, which is a weird stance to take, admittedly. But I do think that these partnerships helped in this situation, I think, in a major, major way. So that's just my thought on it. Anyway, let's move into the world of hockey, shall we? The Stanley Cup playoff participants are now set after a wild night in the NHL last night. So here's the scenario. Philadelphia needs a regulation win. They also need a regulation loss for the Detroit Red Wings if they are going to have a snowball's hope in hell of making the playoffs. And as the night was winding down, Detroit is trailing Montreal with 7 seconds left. Philadelphia needs a regulation win. And so with the game tied at 1 with 3 minutes to go, John Tortorella summons Ersin to the bench, who, by the way, had played quite well for a Philadelphia team that rather abruptly saw their goaltending situation change over the last 6 months or so. But neither here nor there. He summons his goalie to the bench. They are going with the extra attacker to try to win this hockey game. And they get the puck in, get a shot on goal. It is stopped. Washington is sliding it up the ice. And basically, as Tortorella is being like, hey, goalie, come here. The Detroit Red Wings, in their game, score with 3 seconds left to tie the game, basically eliminating Phil, or not basically, absolutely 100% eliminating Philadelphia from playoff contention. So at that point, the aggressive move seems to mean nothing if you're following all this in real time, and it ends up coming back to bite them, I suppose, as TJ Oshie races down the right wing side and puts one into the empty net, sealing away a victory for the Washington Capitals. And they do eventually go on to win 2-1. So there has been criticism today that, John Tortorella, like, he's pulling the goalie, and then they have no chance of making the playoffs. It's like, look, first of all, what does he care if this gave Detroit a fighting chance or not? He's eliminated whether that goal goes in or not. So what does he care? He's not more eliminated if a goal goes in on a goalie or not. So that part of it is weird. But he, I would assume, all day was preaching, just focus on this game. Whatever happens elsewhere, we just focus on our stuff. And so the part of this scenario that he could control, or, you know, the closest he could control, was his team winning a game in regulation. That needed to happen for this to be a successful venture for the Philadelphia Flyers. So he was doing everything he could to win a game in regulation. The timing of it, it stinks for Detroit, because if Philadelphia goes on to win that game, then Detroit is sitting in the driver's seat for a postseason spot. And then Philadelphia, it basically looks like they're just giving it away to allow Washington to get this win. I think any criticism of Torts is assuming that there is a level of paying attention to the results that there probably just wasn't. Like, he got the note from his video guys after, like, yeah, Detroit scored, so we're eliminated. It's like, okay, well, whatever, so go out and try to win a hockey game. He was controlling the one part of this scenario that he could control the most. And so I have no problem with Tortorella pulling the goalie and going for it there and just giving it a go. The fact that it basically eliminated Detroit, I don't think should matter to him even a little bit. So credit Washington, they get in. Lindgren has been an MVP for them. You look at the stretch here. When they needed it the most, he comes up with 4 wins in his last 5 starts. 42 saves against Detroit. Kind of a big game now, in hindsight, where they win that one. He has a bit of a shaky one. I believe it was against Buffalo. Bounces back. 32 saves against Tampa Bay. Again, big game. That team sitting in the first wild card spot. A 16-save shutout against Boston. And then to close out the season, 27 saves in a victory over Philadelphia. Ovechkin is the star. Oshie is a very talented player. Carlson gets headlines too. This team doesn't get close to this spot if Lindgren isn't incredible. Basically, since the trade deadline, he's only lost a few times. He has been phenomenal in this resurgence for Washington. Now, I don't think it's going to mean a lick in the playoffs, but credit to Washington for being able to get in. It's like Philadelphia was a real feel-good story for a lot of the season. I think this offseason is going to be really, 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 really interesting when you have all these teams that are going to be looking to step up, right? Like, Philadelphia's right there. Detroit feels like they're right there. New Jersey has to feel like they are right there. Washington and Pittsburgh are clinging to right their status. And then you have, like, Ottawa is probably looking to move up. Buffalo is looking to advance. So I think the offseason, specifically in the East, is going to be wild. And you're going to have a couple of teams that fancy themselves contenders losing pretty early and much earlier than they would have thought. So I do feel like this offseason is going to be bananas out East. Also in the Eastern Conference last night, the Boston Bruins, and it's something we've talked about on this show for a few days now, the Bruins are sleepwalking to the finish, and they may have sleepwalked into the perfect scenario for them, because I was really worried about Boston, that they wouldn't be able to flip that switch, and they would have Tampa Bay in the first round, and Vasilevsky's playing well, Kucherov is a Hart Trophy candidate, all he does is score big goals in the postseason and on down the line. And I was ready to pick Tampa Bay over Boston. So Boston, what do? They continue to play crappy, and they end up getting the Leafs in the first round, who they big brothered this season. And I'm going to have to do a deeper dive. I don't think Toronto can take advantage of Boston in the way that Tampa Bay could. And it's specifically because of Vasilevsky. The goaltending in Toronto has not been able to click in this last little stretch. They've had stretches this year where it's been able to really get them going. But this goaltending hasn't really been a thing for this team for a while. And so I don't think they have what it takes to take advantage of the sleepiness of Boston. Now, I do think that they have this in the NBA. I'm assuming they have it for NHL as well, or they will. I do think a Toronto to win game one, Boston to win the series bet would be really interesting, because I do think that the Leafs are going to come out flying and kind of catch the Bruins unawares a touch and pick up a win in game one. And then Boston's going to be like, oh, well, that's hilarious, and just pound that nail into the ground. Like, I think this is really, really a bad matchup for Toronto, that Boston just kind of worked their way into, or not even worked their way, just slept their way into. And now for Florida, they end up with the Tampa Bay Lightning. And so it sucks for the Bolts too, because I don't think that Tampa Bay is on Florida's level at this point. I think, like, the goaltending thing where Vasilevsky could steal a couple, Bobrovsky is right there to be able to steal it. And where, okay, well, you got to worry about Kucherov and Point. We got to worry about, like, 15 guys on Florida. They are just a better team. So I think that the way this all shook out, it was setting up where, like, I think Florida probably also beat Toronto. But Tampa Bay had a shot at an upset. And I think Toronto, just style of play, has a touch of a better chance against Florida, but maybe not. But this one, the way it all shook out was kind of best case scenario, I think, for the top two teams in the Atlantic Division. So still quite a bit to figure out, though, in the West, and that will happen over the next couple of days. All right, let's go into the world of professional wrestling for a little bit. I was a day late in watching Monday Night Raw, but just have a couple of quick thoughts as we wrap things up here on a Wednesday. Monday Night Raw came to you from Montreal in the main event. It was Sami Zayn against Chad Gable. And that entrance that Sami Zayn made is the stuff of legends. That was, like, for the segment I did a couple of weeks ago where, hey, not every big thing has to happen at WrestleMania. That felt like a WrestleMania moment, you know, and obviously he couldn't do that walking around WrestleMania. It would take him 45 minutes before he got to the ring. But taking the Canadian flag from the fan, walking in through the front door and the clapping and everything like that, he felt like the biggest superstar on the planet for about 15 minutes there. And you know he can deliver in the ring. It was that type of a change. It's the change in production and the change in presentation specifically for Sami Zayn that makes this feel like this feels like a better start to things post WrestleMania than last year. Like last year felt like a big moment at WrestleMania. The follow up, it felt like every single week it was just fading and fading and fading and fading. This year, it's growing and it's growing and it's growing through 2 weeks. And so I think they have rehabilitated the Sami Zayn character, and they have got back what they lost in between WrestleMania 39 and WrestleMania 40, to the point where I'm going to be doing the booking to WrestleMania 41 coming up on Fightin' Friday this week. Sami Zayn is probably going to be moving up pretty high on my WrestleMania card. I think that there is a real superstar quality that they have found in this guy. The other big news, I love that they have changed the tag team titles and going back to, instead of the Raw Women's Championship and the Raw Tag Team Championships, going with the World Tag Team Championships and the WWE Tag Team Championships. Love it. Absolutely love it. 10 out of 10, no notes. The World Women's Champion, or the Women's World Champion, is now vacant as Rhea Ripley has to give it away because of an injury. A lot of people pissed at Liv Morgan for the chair shot. I'm sure Rhea knew it was coming. Maybe it came in a bit more velocity, but B, it happened when she fell into the wall. So let's not get too much on Liv Morgan. First of all, this really sucks. Like, this was a star-making run for Rhea Ripley. She's in TikTok memes. She is getting interviewed on Logan Paul. She was becoming one of the biggest stars in the company. And so this type of a thing sucks. Like, this was a potential for a Roman Reigns type of a run and a truly star-making run for Rhea Ripley. And it kind of already was. I do think, again, main takeaway, it sucks. But I do think that there is a silver lining to this whole thing. A, she needs to come back a babyface. This whole crowd wants to cheer for her, and they basically have been cheering for her for a little bit. She needs to come back and be a babyface. She needs to come back and hit fucking Riptide on Dom and be the, you know, the biggest badass on the show. But I would not do it as a surprise. I think when she is coming back, it needs to be Triple H at WrestleMania or at Royal Rumble 2002, and it is hype video, and it's whatever this generation's version of U2 is. Imagine Dragons or whoever. I'm not comparing the two globally. It was just a joke. But have like these videos playing for weeks, if not months, leading up to Rhea Ripley's return, and have a gigantic return when she does finally come back, and a like super mega babyface will be born with that. And in the meantime, it's a chance to build up more stars, because to steal a boxing or MMA term, she had kind of cleaned out the division, right? Like, it was becoming more and more difficult to believe any challenger to her title. She absolutely whooped on Natalya. She beats up Zoe Stark. She beats four other women in Saudi Arabia. She beats Nia Jax in Australia. And going up against Liv Morgan, no one was buying that Liv Morgan was going to be the one to take the title away from Rhea Ripley. So now you have a chance where you have the queen is gone, and now you're not judging all of these performers on a, well, do we believe that they could beat Rhea Ripley? We are now looking at them as new main eventers. So there is an opportunity here for WWE to build some new stars. And if this were 3 or 4 years ago, we'd be a little bit concerned about that. But now I think that this sort of creative challenge is something that really gets this group's motor running. And so I think that there is going to be I think that there are going to be a couple of new stars built out of this. And I think the draft coming up, the timing of it works out just quite well for all of this. So I'm very, very interested to see where this all goes. And I think the WWE is now in a spot where they can maximize this. It is AEW Dynamite coming up tonight. It is the go-home show for AEW Dynasty happening this weekend. I hope that this show is one that just gets back to focusing on just this show. I think that the Swerve Samoa Joe storyline has been quite effective, and I have really enjoyed both of those guys, and I think a go home segment is going to be phenomenal with them. You have the Young Bucks and Okada in six-man tag action, so that's going to be fun. The one that I think we kind of need a bit more on I think that there is one more beat that needs to be done on the women's championship with Toni Storm and Thunder Rosa. So that, I think, needs just one more elevation. We also need, I think, a bit of an explanation or something on the Mina Shirakawa, Mariah May segment. Mina Shirakawa is one of my absolute favorite performers. Just everything about the character, when she slides into the ring, it's like, you just feel like with her, it's like, I own 51% of this company. There's an it factor to her that I really appreciate. So I'm happy that she's over here in North America. I just wonder what the fuck that was to start things off with Mariah May. So I think that there is a bit of a fascination here with where do they progress this one from. But like overall, I think that they have a chance to kind of hit a bit of a reset button here and get the focus back on AEW and remind everyone why everyone loves AEW as the alternative and get ready for what should be a blowaway pay-per-view coming up this weekend. All right, that's going to do it for the show. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today. Remember to like this video, subscribe to the channel, and leave a comment if you are watching. If you're listening, make sure that you subscribe and leave a review. You can follow me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I'm at Primetime Klein, twitch.tv/PrimetimePK, and you can email this show, couchpotatodiary@yahoo.com. Coming up tomorrow, what day is it tomorrow? Tomorrow is Thursday, so we'll be looking back on AEW Dynamite with a recap of the show there. The Blue Jays will have finished up a series with the New York Yankees, so we'll be going over that and a whole lot more as we get ready. We have a couple more play-ins that we'll be breaking down as well. So a lot to cover as we go through the week. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and I will talk to all of you later. I am out.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.